2001 Salt Lake Sun Stone Symposium, Session 376. What challenges do LDS children face who have a gay parent? Panelists Jay Bell, Gary Watts, Stephen Fales, Lars Hansen, Barry Bullock, Rodney Boris, and Bart Mortensen.
Welcome everybody here to this particular session. And basically what we're dealing with is gay parents and the various challenges that have happened within their families. And to moderate this session, we're going to ask to turn the time over to Gary Watts to do that. So without any further ado, we'll turn the mic over to him. Welcome. I'm honored to have been asked to moderate this session. My wife and I, Millie, co-chair Family Fellowship, which is a support group for gay and lesbian Mormons, and we've become well acquainted with many Gamophytes, as they're called. This session is being sponsored by Gamophytes, which I think is sort of a expanded acronym for gay Mormon fathers. So we're honored to have the opportunity to sort of moderate this panel. We have three panelists with us. Stephen Fales, who is an actor and is here from New York City, I believe. And I heard only good things about a session that Stephen had earlier today. It sounds like one of those tapes that everyone probably ought to get from what I've heard. So we'll hear from Stephen. And I think we're going to sort of let each of these parents speak, and we'll do it in the order that I've introduced them. So we'll hear from you first, Stephen. And then Lars Hansen. By the way, Stephen has two children, ages 4 and 6. Lars Hansen is a lab tech for one of the dairy companies, and he has three children. He'll follow Stephen. And then Barry Bullock is the father of five children. He is a hairdresser in American Fork, and he'll follow Lars. Now, there is a possibility that we'll have a videotape that includes the other two panelists who are unable to be here, Rodney Voris and Bart Mortensen. If that tape comes, which they have prepared, we'll put it on probably following Barry's presentation, and then open it up for questions and answers. Okay, so we'll turn it over to you first, Stephen.
Okay. I get too close to the mic sometimes. The subject of this session is really dear to me because I do have two children, and they do not know that I am gay right now. They may sense it. When my son was just out in New York, I didn't take him to a Yankees game. I took him to the Jacqueline Kennedy exhibit at the Met.
<Figure it out.
laughs> He's going to figure it out soon. We had a fabulous time. So I'm concerned because, you know, having grown up Mormon, you know, and having read, you know, The Miracle of Forgiveness, which is on every shelf of every, you know, good Mormon family, where it talks about, you know, how wicked homosexuals are, I'm concerned that, you know, one day he'll open that up and read that and start to change his opinion of what he thinks of me. My son and I and my daughter, we have a wonderful relationship. But, you know, I wonder what's going to happen as they find out that I'm gay and then they find out what the policies in the church are. Fortunately, I'm very lucky to be to have a wonderful ex-wife who has dealt with this in her life. Emily Pearson, her father was gay, and he died of AIDS, and she was very close to him. And so for her to grow up knowing, you know, herself that her father was a good person and not just this, you know, wicked servant of Satan, that really helps me as a father. And she is very committed to having her children have a relationship with their father. She doesn't do anything to get in the way of that. In fact, she is golden. She helps. I mean, they just I live in New York City, and I flew them all out to come stay with me. And Emily, she flew with the kids and then dropped them off and flew home, and they were with me for 10 days. And in my home, I don't have any pornography or anything, you know, controversial like that. It's just a normal home. And Emily trusts me with the kids. Emily and I, we have an understanding that when the kids start asking questions, then they're ready to know more. And so for now, we don't talk about the fact that I'm gay. And I think that that's a good thing. I think I was dating a child psychiatrist, and he was telling me that, you know, we need to preserve their innocence as long as possible. They don't know what heterosexual sex is, and so there's no need to get into the nitty-gritty of my life and all of that. My children are 4 and 6. I have a boy who's 6 and a girl who's 4. And I try to make things as easy for Emily as I possibly can, you know, and I try not, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not going to get in the way of their baptisms. I'm not going to get in the way of missions if they choose to do that. So I pay my child support. I see my kids every month, you know, or so. I fly out there, they fly out to me. I fly here, or they come out to me. And Emily and I, we're really good friends, and that's the best thing that we can do for our kids. We talk on the phone every other day. We talk about many things. And I know that that's not the norm. And it really is sad to me when I see, you know, that the children suffer because the parents hate each other over this issue. Pardon? No, she's not. That'll bring in a new dynamic, I'm sure, if she remarries. We've only been divorced a year. Not even a year. The 25th will have been divorced. So, but when I come out, I stay there at Emily's if I need to. In the basement. It's finished, so it's not in a dungeon. So I stay right there. And I'll watch the kids while she goes to work and everything. And I'll see them like for a week. I'm really lucky to be able to do this. I'm not loaded. I sacrifice to do it. I think money makes things a little bit easier if you have it, but especially when you live as far away as I do. But, you know, when I was just out in May, you know, I'm seeing Christian soccer games. We're all going together. We go out to dinner together sometimes. And yet we're not trying to be this together family, you know. We get along, and so we do things on occasion together. You know, I just repainted the rooms inside. I painted Tara's room, all of the rooms, Emily's room. You know, I weed, I try to help out. And then Emily's just as accommodating as she can be and as reasonable as it is to be. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds as the kids get older. But I do trust Emily that... And we've also decided that, you know, Daddy has his idea of what this is about, and Mommy has her idea, and when they get old enough, they will be able to decide for themselves what they think this homosexual thing is. In fact, Emily, you know, one of the first things she says is like, you know, it's the first course I'm signing up for in the next life is Homosexuality 101. She has a lot of questions herself. Carolyn is just an incredible person. I'm probably her biggest fan. And she's been very understanding. She has just been nothing but supportive for me. It's not exactly the same relationship as it used to be, but we still talk on the phone. I'll call her up and say, you know. And we're even collaborating on a project together, a professional project that we keep going. I'm just very, very fortunate. In this cosmic way, I attracted these two women to help me through my journey like this. So I hope to give them something back for their kindness to me. That's all I have to say for right now.
When I was his age, I came out too. So I've been out for almost 22 years now. When I came out, I had my oldest son was 4, and I had a daughter who was 2, and my wife was pregnant at the time that I came out. And I too am very, very grateful that I had a very understanding wife. I don't know that I could have left her, but we'd have had a very miserable life. we separated for a couple of months, and then with her being pregnant, we got back together and thought we'll try to make it. It lasted about a month, and she says, "You're just not happy, and your happiness is the most important thing to me." So we went up and seen my folks, and then I took her back to her parents where she stayed. And we got divorced almost 2 years before we got divorced, but we were separated for those 2 years. And she has been very supportive of me and has encouraged me to spend as much time as I could with the kids. She's never spoken badly of me. I also have a wonderful mother-in-law who suspected it before it even came out that I was gay, and she had suggested that to my wife. But I have my kids now. My oldest is 26, and he's married and has two sons. And the kids grew up knowing that I was gay. They would be 5 or 6 years old when I got a lover. And so most of their life I've had someone in my life. And until their teenage years, it didn't seem to bother them much. And then my son was a little bit affected probably when he was 15, 16 years old. But then 15 and 16-year-olds are difficult anyway. But this was the only time that he kind of held back and questioned a little bit about my homosexuality. But after they get through this age, then it's the in-laws you have to worry about. You know, if they're going to marry someone who's going to be very much against homosexuality or about me, and I was very fortunate that all three of my kids are now married and have all married partners who are okay with me. My older daughter was in the Navy for 3 years, and her husband is a Marine, and they just got married here about 2 months ago. And it was an interesting thing that, you know, because my wife had remarried after 2 years. And so she's had her stepfather and me. And so when my first daughter got married, she chose to have the grandfather give her away. But my other daughter said that would be the easy way out. I want both my fathers to give me away. So her stepfather and me had one arm each and walked her down the aisle. And I had comments, you know, that it was nice that both fathers could give her away. And I think of how many families there are that have two fathers. They just don't get along. And I've been very fortunate that when she remarried, the first year was a little bit touchy. It's like, who controls here? You know, and I says, well, the kids are in your house. You've got them, you know, it's what you say goes. And when they come to visit me, then they're under my rules. So it took a little while to work out those small details, but we have since been very fortunate to get along. And whenever I have a family reunion, my ex-wife and her husband and the kids all come to the family reunion and are just considered siblings now. So, but it's been it's a long path. It's been 20 years, and it's come out well. And that's all I'll say for now.
Well, my story's a little different. When my ex-wife and I split up, let me give you a little background on me first. I was born in Idaho, and then we bounced back and forth between Utah and Idaho as I was growing up. My dad had a little gypsy blood in him. And like all who are raised in the church, and I think Lars and Steve and anyone else who is gay and been in the church will have the same experience, you try to do what you think is right. So you grow up, you go on a mission, you come home, you go to college, you get married, you have children. and you always have this conflict, always. And the first 6 years of my marriage, 7 years of my marriage, were wonderful. And then all hell broke loose, and we lived in 7 years of absolute misery. So when I finally left, my children were not only dealing with the fact that they had a gay father, they were dealing with a very, very angry mother, very disastrous kind of divorce, probably one of the worst situations they could be in. They were dealing with a lot of things. Their mother had some chemical imbalance problems. So they really dealt with a lot of things. Well, I actually didn't come out, quote, until just before Christmas last year. I didn't come out and say, okay, I'm gay. You know, and so we had this conflict going back and forth, not really a conflict, but it was, should we say, just a bit of dishonesty, because I was still playing the game. My partner is just my best friend and all that kind of thing. I didn't like that. I wanted to stand on the hilltop and say, I love this man. He's the most important thing in my life. But I couldn't do that. So, but you also can't come out to your children until you yourself are ready. And I was not. I was still having conflicts with my feelings about the church, trying to deal with that. I had lost my children once through divorce, and I was not sure I was willing to take the chance of losing them again. But just before Christmas, my oldest daughter and I went to dinner, to lunch, and it just came around. And we had the best 2.5 hour talk you ever want to have in your life. And I remember one thing she said to me. She says, Dad, if Ed's a part of your life, we want him a part of our life. And she assured me that the rest of the kids knew and that I just needed to talk to them. And she's been very accepting. I have 3 of my 5 children who are okay. They do not agree. They have problems with dealing with things that come from the church. Am I going to be consigned to hell? Where are we going? The other 2 still have a lot of questions, particularly my son. They went through a lot of... My oldest daughter was married when Gloria and I divorced. And the youngest one was in... The next oldest was engaged. But the 3 younger ones took a lot from the other kids in school. A lot of taunting, a lot of things. But in talking to them, they have said the things that they have learned, the positive outweighs the negative. Because they were taught tolerance. They were taught love for everyone, regardless. They were taught to go to the Kennedy Center instead of the ball game. No, we did go to the ball games. My son is very, very macho. I think he had the biggest problem. He was left alone in a home with a very bitter mother, 4 sisters. And he felt like he had to be the man. So he did a lot of things through high school. I don't mean to be crude or rude, but he looked at me and he said, Dad, I screwed every girl I could to prove I was a man. He played football. He had guns. He had everything that he could think of to prove he was a man. And to this day, every time I see that little round can in his back pocket, I want to kick his butt. Because that was just to prove he was a man. He joined the Marines. He attained some of the highest things that the Marines can obtain. He was on a Marine high team. And understand, during all this time, his mother and I just were in this hate, carrying around all this anger. You may remember the Haitian crisis. Michael was one of the Marines that they snuck into Haiti They sent their luggage in a month early, grew their hair out, and sent them in as tourists. And he spent 4 months on the top of the Haitian embassy with a submachine gun in his hand. Well, during this time, his mother and I had to communicate. And we became pretty good friends. She had been married twice since we split up, and I think she learned how to do it this time. Anyway, that wasn't nice. But I think she did. Anyway, we had to get together. Her husband would be down. We'd be at a soccer game for my daughter. And her husband would be down filming my youngest daughter playing soccer, and we'd have our heads together talking about Michael. We weren't getting any information from Haiti. We weren't only what was on the news. She got to the point where she wouldn't watch the news. She wouldn't talk about it. His picture was on my mantle. I just turned it around to the mantle, to the wall, because I couldn't stand to look at it. And so we got very close. So it's caused some really good things with the children, and particularly with my son, some very bad things. And he has finally come to the point where he has admitted that that's why he did most of it. All the kids, well, your dad's gay. Well, I'm not, you know. And so he did a lot of things just to prove that he was a man. My children's mother and I have a very good relationship right now. As a matter of fact, my mother was Grand Marshal of Alpine's parade this morning, and my ex-wife and her husband were there. So it's been a real long road, but I think if I could advise anyone of anything, it would be to be honest with your family. Don't play the game. Recognize who and what you are, whatever that is, and be it. If you have problems with the church, work them out. Or, as I have done, I choose to ignore one or two of the brethren, and I survive. It's a hard issue, you know. And I just tell my children, well, we're a growing church, we're an everyday church, and I don't think we've received all the revelation we're going to. And so they're doing well. I'm doing well. I told my ex-wife this morning, I said, where's Ed? And she says, oh, he's with the grandkids. And I thought, well, that's a good statement coming from you. And I said, well, they like him better than they do me anyway. She says, everybody loves him. So, you know, we're being accepted, and it's turning out good for me.
I just want to make a couple of observations. Since our family got involved with homosexual activism or interest, I think that Millie and I have said on multiple occasions that this situation is the most difficult thing that we see. And I think it may be the toughest interpersonal kind of relationship to deal with. You'll notice that we don't have a lesbian parent here, and we also don't have any gay parents who have raised their children as gay parents, as partners. I guess if I could express one hope and one dream, it would be that someday we might have a panel of this nature that would have gay couples that would be talking about their children being raised as gay couples rather than as having had their children through heterosexual marriage. And I think that day will come someday. Now I'm going to open it up to questions and answers. Jay, you acted like you wanted to address something.
One comment, there are some gay couples here with their kids in the comments.
Well, we're certainly seeing that as an interesting growing phenomenon in our society, and I think that it's a healthy situation, and anyway, I'm glad they're here. Did you have a question?
Well, I'm saying, my daughter, she's 13, and she's living with my ex-husband and his partner, and he came out to her and me technically a year ago, and it's working out really well also, but I admire the fact that you're going to wait to tell them. often tell your children because it was still a very, very shock to her to have her father be gay. And she's still wrestling with it. And I had to think, well, do I really want to? Because I wasn't really absolutely sure. I kind of had this, do I really want to fight him to take her back? But she's doing really, really well with him. He's a fabulous father. I think gay guys make really great fathers. Honestly, do. But it took him a long time to come out. It took over 5 years before he really wanted to admit it. And he wanted to wait until, the biggest thing I would say is he didn't want a friend of hers to come home and visit and ask, okay, why is this guy always here? He wanted it to come from her, not from a friend.
I would just say that while the literature is quite scanty, the literature does support your view that gay men are good fathers. We don't have a very, very much literature on that, but the literature that has been done would certainly suggest that that's the case. Any other questions for the panelists? Go ahead.
I'm just kind of thinking about as you look back and you went through trying to marriages break up and having, you know, the pain of a divorce, what would you recommend that we do as a society? I mean, gays want children, but there's a lot of pain if they don't acknowledge where they are and they try a heterosexual marriage and then it doesn't work. What would you like to see happen?
I have met a fellow just in passing that what they did, and I thought, hey, this is a great idea. He and his partner had some friends that was a lesbian couple. Well, the lesbian couple decided that the two guys should have a child. So one of them volunteered to be the carrier of the child, and they used artificial insemination, and they have a child. There are all kinds of things to do it. I think in a Mormon society, that's a very difficult question because, number one, they do not really support in vitro fertilization. And I'm sure, and I'm not bashing, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they would not condone children in a gay household. So, you know, there are things they can do.
The way
we did it was the hard way.
Well. And it was the easiest way, too. But I think adoption is a real option. That's a great option.
But in Utah, they're not. In California, you get away with that.
Well, you can move to Vermont or California, but yeah, it is tough here.
It's tough.
So you may want to consider moving until the laws change, if you want it that badly. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, even if you wanted to adopt, there are those who will. You can do it in private means rather than you can't go to the state and adopt through them, but you can still adopt here. I wish that I had knew half of what's out there now. Over the 20 years, the gay community has come a long ways. There's been a lot of education out there. Now we've got gay clubs in high schools. At least it's talking about it. That was probably one of my biggest regrets, was that my wife had to be hurt so bad with this divorce. But I didn't have a clue that there was such an existence as what I'm living now. But I think, yeah, adoption, or there are, I know three couples now that have had surrogate mothers and have their own children, so that is a possibility.
To address the part of the young people nowadays, I think that a lot of groundwork has been laid for them. The fight has been fought and is being fought, and the young people are accepting more readily who they are, rather than, I'm sure all of us, you know, I don't want to deal with this, I'm da-da-da-da-da, you know. Here I was 40 years old, and my family's falling apart, I'm falling apart, because finally I've said, okay, I'm gay. And I think the young people have a much better advantage with the scientific studies. They realize that most of the time it's not going to go away. They know that their families are not going to desert them. And I think that they will have a much easier road than we did. I don't think there will be as apt of a chance happening a Matthew Shepard, for instance. I think because of knowledge and because of the things we've learned, I think that is less apt to happen. And they're aware of that. You know, they know they're not the scourge of the earth, and who they are isn't really sinful. Maybe, you know, if they get involved in certain types of behavior, that is. But who they are is not a sin. And they can't be anybody but who they are.
I'm going to take my prerogative and just ask a question, because it's one that I think is relevant and difficult, and that is the question, does one reach a point in a relationship of no return, so to speak? I think I'm not a proponent of a reparative or adaptive therapy, nor have I ever been. However, one possible indication for, and I prefer to refer to it as adaptive rather than reparative therapy, might be a situation such that as you find yourself in, where you're in a marriage, you have children, and perhaps some therapy effort should or could be given to figure out a way to adapt to the situation rather than go through the divorce and all that. Is that, was that ever a concern? Well, obviously you tried, but what do you have any thoughts about that aspect of it? Is there a role for therapy for married couples, married gay or lesbian people, that could be considered valid to help you stay in a relationship, to adapt to it rather than leaving?
And stay in it for the sake of the children is what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the children's well-being should be taken into account. I know I didn't, you know, I looked at my children and I thought many times, can I sacrifice this part of myself for this? And I thought, yes. But I had also at the same time, you know, in the black and white thinking that my wife was coming from, and in the world I had grown up in, there's no allowance for slip-ups or growth or negotiating or compromising. It's all or nothing. And so I think often in the Mormon Church, you screw up, you're out of there. And so
well,
it's really tough.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of, maybe you look at what was it that we heard in the presidential debate a few years ago, the misery index? You know, if you look at the misery index, is there, can you look at how miserable things are going to be if you go through versus if you stay? And is there a possibility that the misery index for going through the through the breakup and the divorce and all that may be greater than the misery index of staying in?
Along that line, I'm the Gamophite regional rep here for this Intermountain area, and I talk to a lot of guys, email and phone calls, that are having hell. They're in their marriages, they're unhappy. Hindsight for me, 10 years ago I thought, boy, did I make a mistake. I wish I'd have stayed in my marriage. But then I've been around enough married men who are gay, and it's not fair to them, it's not fair to the wife, it's not fair to the kids. My wife was able to find a wonderful man that she's gone to the temple with. And the kids will adjust. I think if you stay where you're unhappy, that you're going to make everybody unhappy. The kids will be miserable.
I was wondering, in your experience,
drug and alcohol problems with people that stayed in their marriages. Do you know anything about that? Because my ex, when we were married, started to have some problems with that because he was fighting this undertow.
Yeah, I think...
Even though we were out, you know, we were right in the temple, we did all that stuff, it just started to get to him.
I think that people, gay, LDS, usually when they come out, that's one of the first things that go is the word of wisdom for some reason. But also, I think not so much with drug and alcohol as well with Valium and drugs like this that, you know, are getting prescribed to help them get through their problems, whereas, you know, they need to be dealt with.
Let's hear. I want to hear from Toby. He had his hand up first.
I wonder if you can tell what your individual experience has been with the church in regards to this process. Yeah, it kind of like offers you certain interests at one point in your life when you made up quite active in the church.
I think we've probably all gone through the excommunication process. Mine was very, very good experience, actually. My stake president was very loving and kind. As a matter of fact, he could see some of the other problems that probably would have caused the divorce other than the fact that I was gay. But that was a good experience. I'm kind of in a position right now of ignoring it. It's like I told my oldest daughter, I've been taught all my life that do this and this and this and this and you will have joy. Well, I was miserable because I was denying a basic essential part of me. And the conflict was, okay, how do I resolve me with this idealistic enzyme we get every month that says you're supposed to be this and this and this, you know, and that therein was the conflict. And as far as the church goes right now, I have less conflict being who I am and more joy being who I am than I did when I was active. I don't deny the church. I have a very strong testimony of the church. But I think there's some issues they need to deal with. And
my greatest fear is that my children will, because of the teachings of the church and a lot of the black and white thinking, that they will somehow feel that they themselves are a mistake.
We dealt with that one.
That's a huge thing. That could lead you into all kinds of dysfunctional behavior if you don't feel like you were supposed to be here. And, you know, when they, if you don't fit in the box in the Mormon church, it's, you know, it's very easy to feel illegitimate. And that's a big fear of mine. I hope they don't. They were supposed to be here. I wanted them. Emily wanted them.
And in that line, I did the mission, the temple marriage, and when I came out, the bishop called me in and talked to me and let me know that excommunication was for repentance, and unless I was ready to repent, there would be no reason to excommunicate me. So at this point, I am still in the church. I am not active in the church, and I have had home teachers, but.
I want your steak present.
Mine told me that they had to keep the church pure.
Yeah. I was fortunate. I had just moved into a new area of Salt Lake at the time. Sandy was brand new when I moved there. And a lot of Californians were moving into this area. And I had a bishop who was from California and very well acquainted with the gay issues. So I was very fortunate.
May we interrupt here for just a moment? We have this videotape, which I think is pertinent, and I think we should play it. So let's break here. This is an 11.5 minute video. So, and if you've got it queued up, let's go ahead and. This is an interview of a gay father, I believe, and. Oh, maybe Barry can.
these children lived with their mother for years and years, and through some actions of hers, they are now living with their father and his partner. They are teenage children and adjusting, from what I can see, very well.
Makes you kind of want to meet her personally, doesn't it? Really refreshing. It just brought one incident to mind for me personally. There was one time many years ago, maybe 94, 95, that I was quoted in the newspaper once of saying that I knew many gay people that I considered to be highly moral. And I'll never forget the phone call I got from one gay person who had read the article in the paper and called me personally and said that that was the first time he'd ever seen in print somebody with a Mormon church background refer to a gay person as moral. I thought that was an interesting thing, and I've never forgotten that call. Robert?
Poses a real question. If I could go back and know what I know, would I do it? I don't know. But I love my children, and whatever pain I have gone through, they have more than made up for. So, yeah, I'd probably do it again. Adoption's easier. Never mind.
Do you want to say anything, Steve?
No. Lars? I wouldn't trade anything for my kids. They're incredible.
Yeah, that would be the same here, is that it's truly a blessing to raise a family and to see your kids grow up. Myself, knowing what I know now, I would probably bypass that and just live the gay life.
Paul?
Let me speak into the microphone, because I wanted to... it ties into what you were just talking about, but back to your question, Gary, about the misery index and the relative choices of staying or going or so forth. And I'd like to talk about that for just a second, because I think my situation more closely parallels the model you were kind of suggesting than the panel members do. And I was struck in part by what Steve said about how it's very, very difficult in Mormon black and white thinking. It really, really is. I mean, I would echo that 1,000 times. The black and white thinking, the one model only, one size fits all, the way many of us have been trained to think, does make it very, very difficult. On the other hand, I think the answer to your question about could it possibly be feasible in some cases to stay rather than go, I think the answer is, it depends, in a nice lawyer-like fashion. And Gary, I reflect back to the story that you've told when you first talked to your son about his being gay, and one of the things you asked him was, well, how gay are you? it depends. It really does.
Yeah.
And I have learned through my work in gametophytes and elsewhere that there are many, many, an incredible number of families right here on the Wasatch Front who somehow, one way or another, sort of muddle through with this situation. And sometimes the misery index is relatively high, and I feel a lot of pain for people in that situation. I know other people who, and I think part of it is getting away from the black and white thinking, who have adopted other models for their life, more complicated family models or whatever, I'm not posing this as an ideal, and all I'm saying is there are many roads to Rome, especially in an area as complicated as this. There are people who one way or another are reasonably happy, and what I also see is that when that's based largely on suppression and denial and sublimation, even what might otherwise might be a minor catastrophe in your life can become a huge one because this issue becomes pulled into it also. But I still see people going along. We don't see those people in these circles, in our groups and so forth, because they don't come out and get involved. But they're muddling through life as best they can. And they may be your choir director or your ward clerk or your organist or 1,000 other things. Or your bishop. If we really knew, and Gary, I've heard you say this before also, that it would be a lot simpler if just one Sunday morning we all woke up and all the gay people were purple and then we'd all know. And yes, that's true, and you would be absolutely astounded if that happened.
Thank you. Let's go to the back corner.
I would like to know how the grandparents of these children feel.
Do we have any grandparents of... Any grandparents here?
My father is just incredibly, I don't know. Yeah, he loves me. He prays for me. We talk on the phone, and he's trying to deal with this. But he's very attentive to my children, and I think he's trying to overcompensate actually for the fact that I'm gay. Sometimes he takes him on more of those masculine outings and things, and tries to. Yeah, yeah. And my dad's real butch. He's a cowboy. He was raised in Wyoming, I'm grateful. I'm glad my dad wants to take him horseback riding all the time. But instead of taking him to Jackie O's place, yeah, it's a fabulous exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum.
Maybe I'll just make one observation. In our own family, I noticed that my married children, I have three daughters who are married, all temple marriages, and. I sort of have observed in their parenting role that they sort of emphasize masculine kinds of things too, which is kind of interesting to me because they're okay with their gay brother and sister in the sense that they see it as a biological phenomenon and sort of a random event. And I think they're more knowledgeable about homosexuality than the run-of-the-mill general population, but I think there's still this interest in trying to do what they can to have their children be straight. And I don't think it's because they're homophobic or anything. I think they just see it as a harder life in society and would prefer that their children not have to deal with it. How about me? I guess I sort of celebrate diversity. I don't have any real concerns about my grandchildren from this standpoint. I have a very strong feeling that homosexuality has a very strong, a very high biological factor. I don't think there's anything I can do personally as a grandfather to alter those outcomes. And so I think as a grandfather of my gay kids, I want them to look on homosexuality as a normal biological variant, and as this young lady did here, love their fellow man unconditionally and make that part of their lives. I'll tell you one little kind of a cute little story that maybe I shouldn't take this, but we recently, in January, we took our entire family over to Hawaii for a week, and our lesbian daughter and her partner went 2 or 3 days ahead of time and ended up meeting us at the airport. And when we had finished the trip and come back, my grandson, who is in kindergarten, his teacher had asked him about the trip. And the first thing he said was that his Aunt Lori and his Aunt Colleen had met us at the airport with all the groceries, because we were, and nobody had coached him in any way. He had sort of deduced the fact that he sees partnerships. He sees Lori in a partnership, and he deduced that Lori was his aunt, and therefore Colleen was his aunt. And it was just the way it ought to be, in my judgment. There wasn't any coaching. He just has come to accept the fact that that's the way it is. And you see, this heterosexual marriage business is a very painful thing for me. I personally hope the time will come where heterosexual marriage won't happen with gay people, that we can be comfortable with who we are and relate to who we are and relate to the people that we can relate to. And then this doesn't have, there is so much pain. I mean, I can feel the pain that's there as a result of the division, the breakup of the family. It's very, very painful. I think about the poor female spouse that's in the partnership and the travail and the hurt that she goes through. And I think we should make every effort to avoid these situations. The church is doing better, as you know. They don't no longer encourage heterosexual marriage as a sort of a cure. I've talked to so many women who have said they felt like they were a prescription for their husband's problem, and they're embittered a little bit by the fact that they've been trapped into a marriage with a gay person, sort of unsuspecting in many cases. In many cases, knowing that their husband was dealing with homosexual feelings before they got into the relationship, and still embarking on it. I do feel very strongly that the natural relationships for gay people are not the same as they are for straight people, and we ought to discourage unnatural relationships instead of encourage them. So I've said too much. Go ahead.
What advice would you give a gentleman who's in a marriage whose wife isn't supportive, that would like to get out, but is concerned that if he does, that his wife would, he would not see his children?
When I left, I threatened my wife. stake president was very much in my ballpark, and I just said, you ever deny me my children, I won't haul you back to court, I will haul you in front of the stake president. But I think communication with those children beforehand, involving them in the discussions, because she's going to be mad. She's mad, you know, and they're going to feel that. My children have told me they never knew when we had, I mean, she never said anything about having an argument, but they always knew when we had a fight. But if they're involved from the beginning and they know that dad's not a bad person, that dad's still the same, like, I don't know who said it, Steve, I think. It was the girl on the TV. You just know a little more about him. My best friend looked at me and he says, you're still Barry. You know, but I think if those children are involved from the beginning, sit them down if they're old enough and say, this is what's going on, I think you'll have a much better chance of not being isolated from those children. Another thing is physically keep yourself close. Live close. You know, don't walk away and hang your head in shame, which is what I did, and it took years to rebuild. So I think the communication with those children and staying close to them is your key.
I want to say something about what came to me is you have to weigh the costs, and things are relative. I'm sure there's some woman in the avenues or in Pepperwood or someone that's saying, listen, I don't care who my husband sleeps with, as long as he brings home that paycheck, he's in that seat with me on Sunday, I don't care. And, you know, maybe there's that type, or there's another that just can't live with that. I mean, everyone has to, what can you live with? And I respect that woman. If she needs that money, she wants that, that's the most important thing to her, fine. You know? Hope she doesn't get any diseases. But anyway, I just wonder, you have to weigh the costs. And for me, my smile was more important than a lot of things. And it was also important for Emily. You just stop smiling and...
Well, I think Paul's comments, it depends, are really relevant. I have a lot of couples that have come to me personally to seek advice, and I have never tried to give advice to them in terms of what they should do other than to sort of counsel them in terms of looking at what the options are and what the potential outcomes are and then letting them make the decisions because, you know, I'm a radiologist and I'm all the time involved with decisions about surgery. People come to me and say, should I have this herniated disc removed or something of that nature? And I have learned over the years that the best advice is to tell them that nobody should make that decision but them, because whether you have the surgery or not depends on the quality of life and what it's doing to your ability to get done what you want to get done. If it's curtailing it and making it impossible for you to really function the way you want, then you better have the surgery. If it's something you can tolerate and put up with, then probably ought to put it off because there are hazards in terms of surgical outcomes, just as there are in decisions about whether you're going to stay in a marriage or not. You know, who can make that decision? No one can make that decision because nobody, I don't care how smart you are, nobody can know all the factors as well as the people that are in the relationship. I do say this. I always say, look, whatever your decision is, you'll have my support. I won't be judgmental. I certainly won't have any preconditions about what you do. You'll have my support and you'll have my empathy because I think you're dealing with a very, very difficult situation.
This is another question along the lines of when a couple is, one of them is dealing with this. Maybe you answered this in your intros, but were you open about the reason for your marriage kind of falling apart at that time? Because I'm thinking of a couple who are going to be divorced, and they have kids, small kids, and I think for her, part of the issue is same-sex orientation, but she's not admitting that openly to her spouse, and the kids are probably too young to really deal with that anyway. And I think it's adding an extra level of pain to her soon-to-be ex, because she's giving all these other reasons instead of what I think is maybe a very core reason. Again, I'm assuming that based on different things. Maybe it's not a major reason, but I think it probably is. Now, I would think it would be better to be open about that, because then the spouse is not feeling the blame for all these other reasons that are being given, and it's more taking some responsibility on herself, along with a lot of reasons for why a marriage ends. But were you open right at the beginning, or as painful as that is, don't you think that's better? Because one of you said something about honesty. Don't you think it is better to be straight about that?
I can't even park straight.
luckily, you've managed to somehow work with this, and we have this kind of positive story given on the video, but like Gary's reminding us, you know, the heartache of the spouse, whether the
yeah, I think that's good, you know. It lets that person off the hook, because maybe they're thinking, well, what is it that I did? And another thing, though, too, you know, it's sometimes we can make the breakup or the divorce all about the sexuality, which I think is a big mistake. That's also black and white thinking.
Yep.
Because I know there are things that Emily and I could have done to be better spouses, but we just blame it on his, you know. And so now she's going to get remarried, and she's going to have to be accountable. Hopefully she won't marry someone gay. I don't think she will. But she's going to have to be accountable for her happiness sometime.
Yeah.
She can't just blame it on a gay husband.
That's a big fear. I think for me, it's a big fear. You're not going to marry somebody that's gay. Because you know.
Listen, we could have a panel up here of the wives. The casual. Well, I don't want to say casualties, because in some ways they choose. I don't want to, you know, I'm not into victims, you know. I don't think that's a good thing, you know. They're poor me, poor me. I mean, they're going wonderful things maybe, even about the relationship, that they won't have in their straight relationship. Their costs. Does a woman want to have someone she can go shopping with? Or does she want to have great sex, but he's going to control her and make her life miserable? You have to choose for yourself what it's going to be.
Well, those are family.
that you are.
I hope so.
I can kind of address this from both sides, because our marriage was kind of over, and I don't really know whether it was because of the gay issue or not, but we lived for 7 years in hell, you know. You did this, no, you did this. Well, I did this because you did this, you know, that kind of a thing. And I honestly used the gay issue to get out. But when I left, I did say, this is why. Her comment was, how do I compete with that? If it was a woman, I could compete with that. Well, there wasn't a man, but I didn't tell her that. But I said, I'm gay. I can't live this way anymore. I just cannot do it. But the anger and everything was already there, you know. So I don't know how you deal with it. Each individual case is different, and I honestly feel if we're doing what the Lord wants us to do, loving everybody, and that person who is gay and wanting to get out of the relationship is honest and upfront, this is not your fault. It really isn't anybody's fault. You know, this is just the way it is, and we can deal with it this way, or we can deal with it this way.
Question?
Ago when we had these lectures first about people being gay, and some of the people said that they knew they were different from the time they were teenagers, and then of course the other issue that Carolyn Pearson indicated, that how gay are you, and sometimes you can live with it in marriage and sometimes you can't. Is that theory still right? Has that changed?
Well, I was gay in the pre-existence. No.
The question she's asking is are we still believing in the Kinsey scale? Is that? Yeah. We have one of the great experts sitting right here behind Paul Tinker and Ron Scow. Do you want to give a 2-minute lecture on the Kinsey scale? Ron Scow, co-author of Peculiar People.
Well, I think, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the scientific literature is concerned, yes, the Kinsey scale is very much still operative today as it was when Kinsey developed it. The Kinsey scale was developed so that Kinsey could look at behavior of people, and they used two things. They used behavior, what have you done in the past and with whom, and they used feelings, dreams, fantasies, and that kind of thing. And so who do you dream about erotically? And they said zero on the scale was 100% heterosexual. 6 on the scale is 100% homosexual. 3 is exactly half and half. And so you have all the numbers in between. So it's a 7-point scale with 3 in the middle. But Kinsey's work suggested that there might be something like 70% of the male population, if you take that, 70% of the male population that is 100% heterosexual, and about 5% on the other end of the scale, with about 5% all along in between. Now, I think most people today think his numbers were a little skewed because of his population sampling. But there are people at every point along that scale. So one of the ways to look at reparative therapy, for example, is to say that if someone goes into reparative therapy or they're in a marriage, as Paul was talking about, and they're a 3 or 2, they can probably stay in the marriage and get along just fine. Most of the people who are up sitting in places like this were 5 or 6 on that scale. Now, that's just a guess, but that's why staying in the marriage is so tough for someone who's a five or six.
Now, I'm going to have Terry. Terry's been trying to get the floor here, and Paul...
Let me just add one thing to what Ron said about the Kinsey scale. There's a methodological problem in the Kinsey scale that I think all the professional people acknowledge, but it makes it difficult for the average person to try to understand if you start talking about the Kinsey scale, and that's the fact, as Ron pointed out, that he put both behavior and feelings on the same schedule. And unless you sort that out in your discussing of whether a person is a 3 or a 6 or a 0 or whatever, unless you make that distinction, the Kinsey scale can mislead you.
Okay, now, Terry has the floor.
I've been trying for the longest time. Thank you, Ron. I wanted to bring up the Kinsey scale. I met Ron at Disneyland years ago. We sat in his room and talked. So nice to see you again. Too loud? We had a gay night, yes. I had a long talk with Evelyn Hooker, too, one time, who was one of the foremost authorities on homosexuality. And she said not only should there be a Kinsey scale, but a preference scale, a sexual scale, a social scale. You may always just love to be with men, but you don't want to have sex with them. That's a social scale. You'd rather have sex with them, but you don't like to mix with them. That's a sexual scale. Anyway. Right. And I did want to say something kind of on the positive side, because we've heard a lot of the bad side of homosexuality. We don't want to hear too many good things, or some of you straight people may wish you were gay. And if you're a 6 on the scale, your thinking is always going to be gay, like the two guys walking down the street who were gay, and this beautiful girl walked by, and this one guy said to the other, "Isn't she gorgeous?" And the other said, "Yeah, it makes you wish you were a lesbian." But anyway, I wrote an article for Dialogue, and then I thought, well, it's going to be published. I better tell my relatives. I'll send it to them so they hear it from me directly. So I sent it to all my relatives, and about a half a year later, they had a big family reunion up in Canada. Well, I have about 100 cousins. And anyway, I went very apprehensively, not sure how they were going to receive me. Well, the first one came up and said, "We're so glad to see you. You're welcome here. We love you. We read your article, and nothing's changed." Another one came up to me and he said, "I have to confess." He said, "I'm gay. I never told anybody before." Another one said, "Could I talk to you?" And he said, "I have to confess, I have children who are gay." I said, "Really? How many?" He said, 4. He had a son, 3 sons and a daughter who were gay. He said, "What do I do with these guys?" And I said, "Well, you listen to them and you love them. That's all you can do." Then I had another one come up and she said, "My husband's gay and we just got a divorce." Another one came up and said, "My husband's gay, we just got a divorce." Another one came up and said, "Well, my husband's a bishop." Then he came up and we had a long talk. And he said, "I was really into it." He said, "I'm still homosexual, but," he said, "I wanted children. I wanted to ascend in the church and do my job." He said, "There have been years when we couldn't have sex, but on the whole, we've had a pretty good marriage, and I'm trying to make it work, and it's surviving." So it was quite an interesting family affair, and it was very positive. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Terry, and my apologies for not recognizing you sooner. Did your question get answered? Go ahead.
I just wanted to add one more dimension. Self-identification is another area altogether. Someone can score objectively on as a homosexual according to the Kinsey scale, but identify themselves as straight. And the mind is a really marvelous thing.
It is a marvelous thing. Okay, now we've only got 3 or 4 minutes left. Robert? Any other questions? Maybe we've finally beat this down. One question here. Go ahead.
I have my sister's daughter married a gay man. He didn't know he was gay.
They are the last to know, you know.
Ron, do you want to tackle that? That is a tough question, and I don't think we have time really to answer that satisfactorily. I think what you need to do is get together with somebody who really knows the literature, knows the feelings, and maybe get involved in a two-hour discussion. And I'd be happy to help do that, or Ron, or someone that's fairly knowledgeable about these issues. That will continue to be a controversial kind of subject, I think, for time immemorial. I will just say this, that in my own personal experience, and my experience is now getting to be quite extensive, I have never met a gay man who claimed to have chosen to be gay. I know two or three women who will say right out that there's no question they chose to be lesbian. And I think it just points up the fact that, again, it all depends. I have a difficult time believing that somebody chooses to do something or be something that doesn't, that they're not interested in. And so which comes first when somebody says they chose to be in a lesbian relationship? Somehow there's got to be an attraction there for that to take place, so it's a little difficult for me to understand how that happens and which comes first. But I think there are some circumstances that can certainly move a person who might be in the 2, 3, or 4 scale to choose a relationship with someone same sex or someone opposite. I think there are circumstances. I don't think it's very likely that people that are 1s or 6s are choosing to be in opposite sex if you're a 6, or a same sex relationship if you're a 0. Excuse me, not 1. So that's a brief answer. Ron, do you want to editorialize it all?
I think you've done well, Gary.
Okay.
Very accurate.
All right. Well, we are at 6:15 now. I think it's, unless there's a burning question, perhaps, Jane, we should conclude our session. And thank you all for being here. I think it's been a stimulating discussion.